This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Monday edition of Kelly and Company. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it wherever you're listening in. Ramya Muth and Kelly McDonald, we are the hosts of the program. You're making your way through a show. You're still feeling like you're with us?
Yes. Actually, no, I do.
No nap needed?
Not yet. But maybe when... You know what they say about adrenaline, right?
Oh, yeah. It just suddenly fizzles out. I always wait for you just to say, well, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I did lose a few of my words today, you know, thinking, wait, where was I going with this? But no, for the most part, that happens on a regular basis.
I was just going to say the same thing. Wow, you don't need to be under the weather for that to happen. At least I know I don't, speaking for myself. Mm-hmm. On Mondays, we love to welcome in Danielle McLaughlin, who returns to the show today for our Know Your Rights segment.
Let's examine questions that can't be answered by a simple yes or no. Join me, Danielle McLaughlin, when we talk about how freedoms collide on Know Your Rights.
Danielle, I think, and it's funny, and it's one of those things some of us, I'm sure, wonder. Hey, I wonder how disabled persons manage in jail. I mean, I've had people say, do they put disabled people in jail if they commit a crime? And we, of course, we know the answer to that. A disabled woman who's an inmate at a Ontario correctional facility is suing the Attorney General of Canada. She says that the prison failed to move her from her wheelchair to her bed, forcing her to sleep on the bare floor of her cell. Danielle, what does society owe the people who have been committed, who have committed crimes?
Well, this is an interesting question in my view, and it's something I've been kind of puzzling over for many years because, you know, if somebody has been convicted of an offense, and in this case, this woman was convicted of second degree murder, we understand that she's going to have to pay a penalty for that. Right. And in fact, she was sentenced to prison for a significant period of time. However, when you're sentenced to prison, the question is, which rights do you lose? Now, obviously, you lose your freedom. You're not going to be out and about if you're in prison. You lose your ability to communicate at will. You know, there are certain rules about who you can call and when you can call them. And your freedom of association is disrupted because you can't just hang out with whoever you want to hang out with. You've got to, you know, it's very carefully, you know, monitored, your freedom of expression. There's a lot of your rights and freedoms, and you know, you have the right to liberty. You have the right to dignity. Now, we don't need to take away every single one of a person's rights and freedoms in order that they are punished for something that
exactly.
they have done.
Right.
Right. So, And yes, you know what? I've heard people ask that question too. If you're disabled, do you go to jail? And the answer is depends on the disability and it depends on what you did, right? You know, if your disability means that you are not actually competent enough to stand trial, you're not going to go to jail because you can't be convicted right. if you can't tell the difference between right and wrong.
But a lot of time people are asking because in their minds it's inhumane to take somebody with a disability and put them, how would they survive? Why would you do? They've already got enough problems.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point of view, Kelly.
That's part of my defense.
Well, have you used it frequently?
That's the judge. Courts in session. Here comes
courts
the judge.
In session. That's right. Well, Kelly, you know, the thing is that the person probably has had difficulty in life, and that may have led to whatever it was that ended up putting them in jail, or it might have been one of the contributing factors. But once somebody is in jail, they don't lose their right to reasonable accommodation. We have human rights, and those human rights are not dissipated simply because you've committed an offense. As I've said, obviously some of them are curtailed because you know, there's a lot involved with going to prison or going to jail. But this woman is an Indigenous woman. She is serving a 6-year, 9-month sentence for manslaughter. Sorry, I said second degree murder. I was wrong. It was for manslaughter. She is suing the Attorney General of Canada for $10 million because she says that her rights have been unreasonably infringed, that she has had to sleep on the floor, she says. She's not been given the kind of assistance that she needs in order to get through a normal day. She's also complained about showering and toileting and some of the other things that sometimes people need assistance for when they are when they need to use a wheelchair. So these are her complaints. She has complained, I think, repeatedly, and she's now filed this claim before the Ontario Superior Court of Justice in Brampton. So she's seeking $5 million in general damages, plus $2.5 million under Section 12 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms for cruel and unusual treatment or punishment. Now, that's one of the things that people don't think about very often. We know that the government, or the courts can have you imprisoned for something that you have done that is against the law, but they are not allowed to use cruel and unusual punishment or treatment. One of the issues there is that's not defined. So, what for one person may be, just an ordinary way of going about life, for another may constitute cruel and unusual treatment. So if you were to say, well, everybody gets a cell that has a bed and a toilet in it, and they can, lie on the bed and use the toilet whenever they need to, that looks quite different for somebody who has a mobility issue than it does for somebody who does not have that particular disability. If you have low vision or you're blind, your needs in that cell or for exercise, for example, may be different from a person who has full vision. So is the prison still required to provide you with reasonable accommodation, even though they are punishing you for an offense? Do we owe the people who we are incarcerating something? What do you guys think we should be, we should set out as the sort of minimum level of treatment for people who are incarcerated? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, for me, Danielle, I'm not sure if this is necessarily an answer, but the word that comes to mind is dignity, right? I mean,
absolutely.
And of course, you're being stripped of rights, like you just literally walked us through it. But at the same time, for someone, because of their disability, they're no longer, even within the prison rights, able to have their needs met, right? Like, are you able to wash yourself? Are you able to lay down on a bed that everybody else is able to do, get on a bunk bed? No. So then what are the accommodations that are being met? Accommodations for these things shouldn't change because you're in prison, right? You should be able to use the toilet. Maybe the conditions of the toilet are not gourmet, but you should still be able to have these basic rights. That's not freedom, right? That's not an extra privilege or whatever. This should be part of, like, your identity is being stripped because you're in prison. And for some reason, to me, that not sure what the rights version of this is, but it doesn't sit well with me that because you're disabled, that these things are not given value.
Chefs are screaming at you, gourmet for a toilet. They're mad at you now for that kind of. You know, also Danielle and Ramya, like,
well,
totally.
Comfort.
Well, exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
The Cadillac, then, right?
And the Cadillac toilet. Yes.
Exactly. Danielle, my thing too, to add to what Ramya said, is also that extension of people are not just put into jail to die, to fade, to whatever.
That's right.
Because, well, you got 20 years or your life or whatever, you don't need to learn more education. You don't need to have handball or exercise time in the yard or to be able to enjoy a TV show. You know, we have discussed the rights of human beings, the rights of people. They are still citizens in the country generally that they're exactly. serving time.
And not only
we
that,
can sit
Kelly,
here and argue about the rehabilitation aspect of
right.
prison all yeah. day and whether it works or not, but nonetheless.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that we have to remember is virtually everyone gets out of prison. The numbers of people who are there for the rest of their lives is so small as almost to be insignificant. So when you think about how, if you treat somebody like a human being who has dignity, what is the likelihood that their behavior will be more reasonable when they get out, not if they get out, but when they get out of prison, than if you treat them to cruel and unusual, punishment? And I think we have to realize that, you know, we're responsible as a society for ensuring that people are treated in such a way that they can come out of there as reasonable human beings. You know, that expression, hurt people, and, you know, that I think that we should be aware that if we are hurting people, they may get out and, you know, not see any reason why they shouldn't hurt people themselves. So, you know, these are very important. There are two cases that were decided. This one is still before the court, so we don't really know what it's going to look like as it continues to unfold. But there's a case from 2013 called Collins v. Canada, in which a prisoner of a penitentiary was who suffered from a physical disability, which prevented him from standing for significant periods of time. He wasn't able to stand. There was a prison procedure. I'm not quite clear what that procedure was, but it required him to stand. He wasn't able to do that, and he was punished for failing to comply with the order. He sued, and the federal court regarded they looked at the judicial review. The Court of Appeal concluded the judge erred in allowing the Attorney General's judicial review application. So although he correctly identified the proper standard of review, reasonableness, the judge failed to apply the standard and proceed on the standard of correctness. So they went into very complex law in all of this. Once you've punished somebody, you can't rescind that punishment. You know, if I say, you know, like to a kid in school, you're suspended for 3 days. Oops, I made a mistake. Here are your 3 days back. That doesn't happen, right? So if we say to a prisoner, you know, you're going to be disciplined for this behavior, and then we say, oops, the judge said you made a mistake. We shouldn't have disciplined you for that. Too late, right? It's happened. The person has been treated in such a way as to have lost his dignity for some period of time. And this is one of the reasons that it's so difficult for people to get access simply to that right to dignity, as Rumya so correctly described this. By the time you complain about something, it's something that's already happened. So, you know, to actually set things up in advance in such a way that people, you know, will maintain their dignity is really the question we look at. There was another case in 2008 where somebody sued the Attorney General of Canada because he had a physical disability, used a wheelchair, and they couldn't, or they didn't, I shouldn't say couldn't, managed to separate the shower area from where he had left his wheelchair. So his wheelchair got wet, it didn't get dried, and he ended up with some serious sores that required medical attention. And he sued because they were not reasonably accommodating his needs. And he was entitled to what they call limited injunctive relief, which did not involve transfer to another facility. I think that's what he had wanted, was to be moved to a different facility. So they found another way of dealing with the particular problem. But he's already got the sores. You know, this has already happened to him. So some people have said, well, you know, what we need to do is look at this preemptively. Many of our prisons are incredibly old. They really, they aren't suitable for people with disabilities. And we know that, you know, in the general population, at least 15% of people are living with disabilities. So why would it be any different in the prison population? In fact, it might even be greater in the prison population if you, you know, look through, you know, all of the different issues that have brought people to prison in the first place, particularly people who have, a mental disability. So some people have said, well, what we need to do is retrofit these old prisons so that they're suitable for people with certain disabilities. Mm-hmm. Other people have said, it's just too expensive to do that. I mean, some of these, you know, these are, some of them are more than a century old. They barely have plumbing, so it's going to take a lot longer to do that. And it's going to be a real, much too costly. We need to just build new prisons. But other people have said, you know, prison's not working all that well. There are countries that try very, very hard to keep people out of prison to begin with. Could we look at a different kind of system?
Right,
where... Yeah, change the model. Exactly. If you look to the people south of us, that's not the model we want, where you have a prison industrial complex, you know, that just grows and grows and people are making really good profits out of building more prisons and incarcerating more and more people. That doesn't give anyone dignity, and it doesn't help society. It doesn't lower the crime rate. It doesn't do anything to benefit society. So I think that when we look at cases like this woman and what she complains about, I think we mm-hmm. need to look at the bigger picture and ask ourselves, is there another way? Could we be doing something? You know, if this woman isn't a danger to society other than to the person that you know, she was clearly involved with, could we think of something else to do? And I leave that as a question. I think it's time that we start thinking more broadly and also more carefully about how we treat people who are convicted of crimes, and particularly people who live with disabilities and are convicted of crimes.
Good question put out there. We'll close it at that. That was Know Your Rights contributor Danielle McLaughlin, as she's with us every week on the program at this time today, speaking with us about the rights of disabled prisoners. We're going to wrap up the program in just a second. It's Kelly and Company. Please return. We'll tell you what tomorrow's show looks like. We'll see what the gang over on Now with Dave Brown is doing and have a little more conversation. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.